Daniel chapter number 5, and I want to begin reading in verse number 1. Daniel chapter number 5, verse number 1. Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before 1,000. Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father, Nebuchadnezzar, had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princesses and his wives and his concubines might drink therein. And they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem. And the king and the princesses and his wives and his concubines drank in them. They drank wine and they praised the gods of gold and silver and brass and of iron and of wood and of stone. In the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Verse 6. Then the king's countenance was changed and his thoughts troubled him so that the joints of his loins were loose and his knees smote one against another. Now drop down with me in verse 25. And this is the writing that was written. Many, many, Tinko, Upharsin. Verse 26, this is the interpretation of the thing. Many, God has numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tinko, thou hast weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Prius, the kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet and put a chain about his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler of the kingdom. And in that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. Thank you. That'll be all the scripture I read. I love the book of Daniel. It's a very deep book that's been misrepresented and misinterpreted by a lot of people. There is no way that you can biblically study the subject of eschatology or the second coming of Jesus without including the book of Daniel. For it is woven so deeply within the book of Ezekiel and also within the 22 chapters of the book of Revelation. The word Daniel simply means God is the judge. Daniel wrote this book. He was the author of it. He wrote it between 540 and 530 B.C. Daniel was a noble Jew down in Jerusalem, and he was exiled to Babylon during the time when Nebuchadnezzar came down and overtook Jerusalem and took the young men back to Babylon to be slaves. In all 70 years that Israel was in captivity in Babylon, Daniel stayed there the entire time. Daniel is a book that contains both the past and future references to the land of Israel. One message God was sending Israel through the prophet Daniel was this: if I'm God enough to deliver an individual, I am also God enough to deliver a nation. When you read the 12 chapters of the book of Daniel, the first 6 chapters is what they were going through. But from chapter 7 through chapter number 12 are prophetic chapters concerning Israel that are yet in the future. The book of Daniel is a little bit different than most prophets, because most prophets prophesied of judgment that was to come. But Daniel is different because he is prophesying of judgment while he was living in it that very day. As Nebuchadnezzar grew old and they were in the captivity for 70 years, he passed his leadership role on to his son named Belshazzar. The kingdom all of a sudden takes a turn and it gets bad very quickly. So vile was the kingdom and Belshazzar that God put a halt to the reign of that empire in just a matter of a couple of hours. While the dignitaries were having their feast and party, God's hand appeared on a wall and his finger wrote of judgment and doom that was sure to come. Within just minutes, the party was over, and within just hours, the kingdom had fallen and the Medes and the Persian were now the second world kingdom. I will admit to you, when God began to write on the wall with his finger, fear and respect fell upon all the people that was at the party, but it was too late. God was not about to stop his hand from moving in wrath and vengeance. There's going to be a day when this country will fear God, but I'm afraid they're going to wait too late. And the same pattern that I saw appearing, that you can read and witness in Daniel chapter number 1 through chapter number 12, the same things that aggravated God to the point of no more patience is the same things that I see progressing in our country on a daily basis. And God, being a God of consistency, if He was a God that would judge Babylon for their iniquity, He is the same God that'll judge America for her iniquity. Don't you think just because we've got the red, white, and blue that we get a free pass from God. This country will be held accountable to God on the judgment of the nations, just like every other country this world has ever known. God is patient. He's long-suffering with ungodly countries. But there are some things that a nation can do that has promised to bring the wrath, the vengeance, and the judgment of God. I can see the handwriting on the wall. I'm 58 years old. I'm old enough to remember better days that this country had. And if we don't turn this nation back to God and get this thing turned around, we are headed for wrath, judgment, and vengeance of a thrice holy God. Let me show you the things that were appearing back in Daniel's day that made God say, it's over. The handwriting's on the wall. America, you better enjoy your party, because this thing is just about over with. Let me give you the five things that God showed me, and I'm done. Number one, the first thing that made God bring judgment upon them and in their party, the handwriting was on the wall in chapter 3 when it come to who was controlling the children. You remember back when they took Daniel and the three Hebrew children from captives out of the land of Israel, and they took them to Babylon. You remember that the king and his people decided that they were going to tell all the children what they could eat. And you remember Daniel refused to eat Obama meat. I mean the meat of Babylon, excuse me. And you Democrats, look up here at me now. I can throw a songbook 60 feet and hit you right between the eyeballs. And the king said, we're going to dictate what the children eat. And it was Daniel and the three Hebrew children that went before the committee and said, look, we're Israelites. We don't eat what you people eat. It's not a culture thing. It's a religious thing. We have dedicated our lives to God. We want to keep our bodies healthy. And you know the story, how they wanted to eat beans. And the king allowed them to do it for several days. And at the end of those several days, when they'd done a physical on them, Daniel and those children were in better physical condition than the people and the children that ate the king's meat. You know, we're living in a messed up country when the government thinks we're so dumb, we don't know how to feed our children. Now, I'm not being mean because I'm not a Republican or a Democrat, but Michelle Obama don't need to tell me what my kids need to eat. I think I know what my kids need to eat. And I got news for all these political retards. You didn't go through the jaws of death to birth my baby. You didn't pay all the bills when they were born. You didn't rock their fever when they were sick. You didn't teach them how to walk. You didn't teach them how to eat. You didn't teach them how to talk. And by God, you're not coming into my house now and taking over my children and tell me they belong to the state. They belong to me, my wife, and the Lord. There's an all-out war on who really owns the children of our country. Let me tell you how warped some politicians are. They believe because you got a marriage license to be married, and that license was issued by the state, that anything that comes as a result of that license belongs to the state. That includes your children. Now, thank God that's not law, and thank God those idiots that believe that were thrown out of office. Matter of fact, they ought to be thrown out of the country. That's a bunch of communism, and we don't need that bunch of nonsense around here. But I say to you, they're trying to take over the controlling of our children. When you read the book of Daniel, did you know the government even tried telling the children what kind of music they had to listen to? You remember the king went to the three Hebrew boys and said, when you hear the music play, we want you to bow with the rest of the children in the kingdom. I promise you it wasn't gospel music. I promise you it wasn't southern gospel music. I promise you it wasn't Bible music. The world can only produce one kind of music, and that's anti-God, worldly filth, rot that ought to be cast into the hell that it came out of. That's right. And I don't need a bunch of idiots that look like they need spray dipped in worm trying to tell me what kind of music my children need to listen to. What's wrong with "There's a fountain filled with blood, amazing grace, how sweet the sound, just over in the glory land"? You tell me what's wrong with that. They're trying to control our children, not only through their diet, but through their music. Have you listened to what is called music these days? Are you kidding me? I'm not listening to anybody sing that looks like 20 midgets just moved out of the seat of his britches. If he ain't got enough sense to pull his pants up and pull a set of suspenders on, I don't have much confidence in anything those idiots have got to say. And that bunch of nonsense not controlling my kids. I don't understand what they're saying anyhow. And you jerk your head like a turkey having a seizure. You can't listen to that bunch of nonsense and keep a right mind. I say that stuff's crazy. I say it all the time, but we got visitors here, so I want to say it again. You know what rap music means, R-A-P? Retards attempting poetry. That's what rap music means. And there's something wrong with people that get a thrill out of stuff that doesn't make sense anyhow. You can't let your kids listen to that filth. Have you ever read the lyrics of what those men are saying and those women? It is absolute filth. They need their mouth washed out with soap is what they need. And they need to find out what real singing is. Any kind of music you put on in your car and it makes your car jump out of gear, you know. Oh, yeah, I know I'm preaching, and I know you're not coming back, but that's fine with me. I was preaching before you come. I'll be preaching when you're gone. I see the handwriting on the wall. They're trying to tell us what we could eat. They're trying to tell us what kind of music to listen to. And I got something else. They're trying to tell us who and how to worship. Those three Hebrew children said, "Well, what are we supposed to do when they play the music?" They said, "Get on your knees." Nebuchadnezzar had built an image of solid gold. And he was leading the next generation in the paganism. Stay with me now. He was leading them in the paganism by controlling the music they were listening to. See, the style of music you listen to infiltrates and influences the style of worship you have. You know why they were worshiping the wrong God? They were listening to the wrong music. I know you're not going to shout, "Bless God Almighty," but I'm going to preach it anyhow. You can't listen to that ungodly mess all week and think you can worship God right on Sunday. Trying to control who and how we worship. I want to make this very public and very clear. This is not a contemporary church. A group ain't getting up here that looks like they hadn't had a bath in 6 months and the knees ripped out of their pants and they don't know what a barbershop and a shaver is. They're not getting on this platform. We're not turning the lights out. Bless God, women aren't getting up here that don't have enough clothes on to make a union suit for a gnat and grab a microphone and singing in this church. That's not going to happen. This is an old-fashioned, Bible-believing, hell-raising, Christ-honoring, devil-killing, Bible-believing church! And the world is not going to come in here and dictate to our children how they can worship. You remember when Moses went down in Egypt to get the children of Israel to be released from 400 years of captivity. You remember Moses said to Pharaoh, "We want to go out into our own land and worship." Now watch this, Brother Smith. Pharaoh knew he wasn't going to change those old timers. He knew they weren't going to give in to something new. So here's what he said to them. "Y'all go ahead. Just leave all your kids here. Everybody 21 and under, you leave them here. Y'all go ahead and go to church." Because he didn't want the influence of that old style of worship to come in the hearts and lives in the next generation to be exposed to it. I'm going to tell you, going to church is not a nightclub. Going to church is not a rock and roll concert. Going to church is not a social hall. This ain't a place where you drink wine and fool with somebody else's wife and mess around and tell dirty jokes. That's not happening here, brother. This is a church, for God's sake. Oh, yes. There's a battle over who owns the children. The parents or the government. They want to tell our children how to worship. They want to educate our children in a way that's abstract from the Word of God. They don't want children to be corrected, guided, or led by the example of their parents. This didn't happen in Tennessee lately, and I hope it doesn't, because if it does, I'm hitting the news media wide open with it. But these schools that are making these boys carry these baby dolls, and they cry, and they throw up, and they wet their diapers, and all that other bunch of stupid stuff. I'm going to tell you something. My boy ain't never carried a baby doll. He's not going to carry a baby doll. And there's something warped with the school system that wants a bunch of boys to carry a baby doll. Amen, that's right. Bless God, men, when you grow up, it's not your place to stay at home and wipe up, puke, and change a diaper. That's what you get married for. It takes a woman to have a baby, by the way. You let mama do that. You get your fat, lazy tail out of bed. Go get you a job and pay the bills. That's what God intended for you to do. One of the ladies of our church whipped one of her teenage boys. He went to school the next day, told the guidance counselor, said, "My mama whooped me." She said, "What'd you do?" He said, "I told her to shut up, and she told me to sit down. I wouldn't do it. She went to grab me and set me down at the dinner table. I pushed her away, and she took a belt and beat my rear end with it." So he went and told the guidance counselor. So since the state thinks they control our children, they sent government officials to her home. She called me, nervous wreck, scared to death. So I went up there, and I met with them. They told the whole story. The son said, "That's exactly right." She said, "I smacked his back end with a belt. No harm. Everything was done right. She wasn't crazy and stupid and stuff." And so the DSS worker said, "Well, you can't whip your kids." I said, "Wait a minute. Who told you that?" I said, "By the way, lady, are you married?" She said, "No." I said, "Are you a lesbian?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "Then shut your filthy mouth. You don't know what raising kids is all about anyhow. Won't you shut your mouth?" There ain't no dyke, sow, pig, ugly lesbian going to tell me how to raise my kid when she's never got sugar from a man in the first place. Are you out of your ever-loving mind? So I looked at the lady. I said, "Throw her out of your house." I said, "Throw her out. I wouldn't give her 2 seconds. Get her out of your house." That lady turned around. And I said, "By the way, lady, I want to ask you something. Can your mama recognize you by your feet?" She said, "I don't know why." I said, "Because if you come to my house to take my kids, I'm going to blow your head off. They're my responsibility. God gave them to me. I don't abuse my kids. I feed my kids. I clothe my kids. I put a roof over their head. I give them a good education. I raise them in the house of God. And you tell the state to shut up and leave me alone." Y'all aren't going to stay with me through this whole thing, but I'm going to get as deep as I can. And when 30 minutes is over, I'm gone. Number two. Not only because of the control of children, but I see the handwriting on the wall because of the corruption of leadership. See, Nebuchadnezzar got to the point in chapter 4 where he thought he was God. So you know what God did to him, Brother Chad? He turned him into a beast. His hair turned to feathers, his fingers turned to claws, and God made him a vegetarian that ate grass like the cattle of the field. And Nebuchadnezzar was driven from his throne out into the wilderness for 7 years. He lived like a beast. Because he thought that government was God. You see here, it was the political parties that looked upon the people back in this day. And they looked upon the people as servants and slaves. The system of that day had become crooked, greedy, and self-centered. They were liars, immoral, unaccountable, liberals, and godless. I don't have to draw an analogy, I think, very much to tell you that's exactly where the political system has gone. I don't care whether you're Republican. We're so far beyond that kind of divide. I'm telling you, Washington is so corrupt that even demons blush with what's going on up there today. I tell you, Trump don't need to drain the swamp. He needs to blow it up. Get rid of it all together. Can you believe we got a guy that was serving as a political leader in our country, that was sending naked pictures of himself to teenage girls? Are you kidding me? And his name is so funny that I can't mention it because I won't quit laughing. But this stupid idiot is sending pictures of his naked body to girls that are underage. Now listen, that's perverted. That's sick. This guy was in charge of a community, a state. He was a senator. He was looked up to. He was respected. But the same vile nonsense that's been revealed in his life is a daily epidemic that's going on in the leadership of our country. They become blind concerning what's best for the nation, and they're only focused on what is best for themselves. Back in Nebuchadnezzar's day, the way he got control on the people was he gave them a dependency of governmental funding. They were to stay at home, get a monthly check, and let the slaves from Jerusalem do all the work. There was no responsibilities in their life. The government paid all their bills. There were no obligations of growing up and being mature. Is anybody going to stay with me now? Let me tell you something. I am a law-abiding, tax-paying citizen. I have never filed for tax exemption because I'm a preacher. I've never done that. Because I feel like whether I'm a preacher or a janitor, I owe this country for being so good to me. I pay my taxes every week just like you do. So the next time a stupid pot-bellied pig idiot talks about preachers can't preach because they're tax exempt, you tell them your preacher's not, and I'm going to keep preaching it tight and right, and I don't need the government's money to do it. I pay my taxes. And in the taxes that I pay, it supports women that are having children out of wedlock. It supports killing 4,000 babies every day in the United States of America. It supports that crowd in Washington laying drunk, buying $500 bottles of wine, and we're trying to pay grocery bills and keep our electricity turned on. So I'm a law-abiding citizen that pays my taxes. So anything I want to say about where my taxes is going, I got a God-given legal liberty right to do so. And I am for helping anybody that has a disability, a limitation, or a handicap. I gladly pay my taxes to make sure and ensure that you have a life as normal as it possibly can be. For years, I bought every year an electric wheelchair for the paralyzed vets of America, me and two other doctors. Sometimes those wheelchairs were $20,000 to buy them a new one. I'm for people that are hurting. I'm for people that can't find a job. Unemployment's a good thing. You pay it while you're working, and if you lose your job, you deserve it. You ought to get it. Don't feel bad about it. It's your money in the first place. That's exactly right. If you got hurt on the job and you're getting workman's comp, don't bow your head when they mail you a check. You paid that while you were working. You got hurt. You need help paying your bills. I don't have a bit of problem with that. But oh, how I have a problem with a 400-pound hippopotamus laying in the bed the 1 o'clock in the afternoon with empty Dorito bags around the bed and too sorry to get up out of bed and even wash their clothes and get a job. These people here, they're working two jobs. They're working 7 days a week and they barely got their electricity on. And we're paying a bunch of losers to shack up like a bunch of rabbits. I tell you, brother, the handwriting is on the wall. Handwriting's on the wall. When it comes to the corruption in leadership, this may be the third one and the last one I get to, but I want to talk about the handwriting's on the wall because they begin to curse the holy things of God. It was in chapter number 5 that Belshazzar had 1,000 of his lords there. He had his wives and his concubines, which were shack-up whores, is really all they were. And while they were having their party getting drunk, he thought it would be awesome, Brother Jack, to go get those vessels of gold and silver that they had taken from Jerusalem. You see, Brother Mark, Jesus prophesied that Jerusalem would fall. And when the Babylonian came down and destroyed Jerusalem, they burnt the temple of God to the ground. So now we know right away, Brother Adams, we're dealing with a nation that has no regard for holy things. The temple was burnt to ashes before they left Jerusalem. Nehemiah found it that way. And not only did they do that, Brother Gary, but before they burn it to the ground, all those holy vessels that only the high priests were permitted to touch were brought out of the temple prior to it being burnt. When they burned it, they took those gold and silver vessels back to Babylon. Now they're having a big party. They're fornicating, adultery, swing parties, co-eds, all getting together drunk, and they take those sacred, dedicated to God vessels and brought them into a pagan, illicit sex party and begin to drink fermented wine and worship the gods of gold and silver. There was no respect for the holy things of God back in Nebuchadnezzar's day. I want to say to you, I see the handwriting on the wall. This very attitude creeping in to the generation that we now have. It seems like people think nothing of disrespecting things that used to be called holy and dedicated. Everything to do with God's holiness was banished, and it was just considered simplicity and normal. They had burned a temple, and now they were using these vessels as an abomination in the sight of God. And when you take things that are dedicated to be holy, and you call them common, and you start acting like it's common, you're going to get the wrath of God on you in a country like we've never known before. I'm old enough to know, Brother Guy. I remember when churches never had a lock on the door. I remember those days, Brother Charles. Churches never locked their doors so that people in the community could come any time, any day of the week, and find their place in an altar and pray and give their petitions to God. Churches never had locks on them when I was a boy. You know what we got now? We got locks. We got alarms. We got cameras. We got security teams. You know why you got to have all that nonsense and waste all God's money on that? Because nobody respects the holy things of God anymore. They have no respect for the house of God anymore. We tell you, brother, when I was lost and didn't know God, when I walked by a church with a cigarette and a beer in my hand, I'd hide them behind my back. And I didn't know a lot, and I understand God sees everything, but I was just lost. I couldn't imagine drinking a beer in front of a church, smoking a cigarette, or telling a dirty joke. Now, bless God, the average youth department thinks nothing about pulling up in their own church and throwing their empty beer cans out in the lawn and behind the fellowship hall. And we're wondering why the wrath of God has been kindled across this country. You can't treat the church of the living God like it's common and like it's normal and abuse things that's been set aside to be holy and it not become a place of judgment and wrath. Listen, the average parking lot of a church is nothing but a fornicating area for the free sex movement of this millennial generation. That's all it is. I raised hell and ran some families out of here because their kids were a bunch of fornicating dogs wanting to meet behind this fellowship hall. And I'm going to tell you, like I told them, hell will sell ice cream before your little daughter gets banged behind this fellowship hall. I'll raise so much hell. I'll raise so much hell. This ain't a whorehouse. It's a church house. Your daughter ain't fornicating in this church property, honey. And your little toe-headed boy isn't either. I'll drag his naked body out of the backseat of that car, sling his tail up in the middle of the road, and call the police and have him put in jail. I tell you, there's something wrong. We shouldn't even have to be preaching on stuff like this going on in the house of God. What's happening? The handwriting's on the wall. It's not just the people in the pew. Oh, no. It's these good-for-nothing hireling preachers. No more called of God than a billy goat that have filled our pulpits, that are fondling these little kids and fooling with these little boys and girls. I'll tell you something, Brother Woody, and you hear me well. Any man that claims to be a man of God, and he inappropriately puts his hand on a little kid, they ought to hang him on Main Street. He ought to be hung on Main Street. He ought to be hung on Main Street. Don't put the pervert in jail, and my tax dollars have to feed that idiot for 60 years. I'm going to tell you a bunch of sex perverts something. There's too many dirty women out there that you can fool with for free. You don't have to mess up somebody's daughter or somebody's son, and if you do, you ought to die for it. You ought to die. Well, tell every one of you perverts something. You get caught fooling with a kid here, you won't need an attorney. You'll need a funeral director. We'll beat the living devil out of you. We're not putting up with that here. Stupidest mess I've ever seen in my life. I was in a meeting some time ago. The pastor came to me and said, "You see those two families sitting on the left?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, those are my two staff members. I said, okay, good. I'd never been there before. He said, let me tell you how awesome God is. He said, both of them were discontent with their marriage. They were coming to me for counseling, and both of them decided they couldn't live with their wives anymore. They were getting a divorce. He said, brother, it was just God, the way this all worked out. He said, they got divorced. Brother Doug fell in love with each other's wives and married each other's wives. And I said, they're still associates in this church? He said, oh yeah, isn't it wonderful how God put it all together? When I got done that Sunday morning, I tore up what everybody put together. Are you kidding me? Have we reached that low of an ebb that there's no moral compass in the pulpit anymore? No preacher that doesn't have the ability to control his fleshly desires has any right to stand up in front of you in any given day and open the lids of the Word of God and tell you how to live. We can't even keep his pants up, for God's sake. I notice the clapping's getting lower, but I'm going to keep preaching. It'll turn into a moan in a minute, but I'm going to stay at it while I'm here. Members of churches engaging in social drinking and pot parties. You can be a social drinker. You can drink all the liquor you want. You're of age. I can't stop you. But I tell you what, you're not going to be a member of this church and do it. You're not going to be a member of this church and do it. You can go to your pot party, smoke all the pot you want, but you ain't smoking pot on Saturday and getting up in this choir on Sunday. That's not happening here. The holy things of God are to be kept that way. I've never seen anything like it in all my life. People think nothing about smoking and drinking and cussing on church property. And those of you that have a habit with smoking, that's between you and God. But I would appreciate it if you would not do it on church property. Because I preach against it, because you're killing yourself and you're going to get on a tube and you're going to have a bunch of plastic shoved down your throat. You're going to call me up to the hospital to pray for you because you're full of lung smoke and you're full of cancer and you want God to heal you. It's not going to happen. But if you want to smoke yourself to heaven, I don't care. But I say it's wrong. It's not good for you. But when I preach against it and you're smoking in front of the church, the young people get the philosophy. The preacher may preach it, but we don't have to live it. So if you're going to smoke your brains out and go to heaven early, at least have the decency to get in your own automobile so we don't have to suck it when we come through the front door of the church. It is so bad. Am I all right? Am I doing all right? It is so bad that in our churches, teenagers are going to the bathroom during preaching and taking illicit pictures of themselves in the bathroom and then texting it to the other young people in the church. You write this down, Jack. You ever take a picture in a bathroom and send it to somebody in this church? You got hell to pay! And by the way, parent, if your daughter's that stupid, she don't deserve a phone in the first place. Handwriting's on the wall. Let me give you this last one. I want to talk about Christian persecution for just a minute. The three Hebrew children were thrown in the fire. You remember the story? You know why they were thrown in the fire? Because of their faith in God. They said, King, even if God doesn't deliver us, you remember one thing, He's God, but God's able to deliver us. They killed those three kids, they tried to, all because of their faith. They weren't breaking the law. They just didn't let them talk about God. When Daniel was thrown in the den of lions, and by the way, always remember this, Brother Spencer, it was not a lion's den. Because a lion's den could be empty. It's just a den where you keep lions. So if you say Daniel was in a lion's den, that really doesn't mean anything. He was in a den of lions. They were in the den with him. You know why they put Daniel in prison? You know why they were going to let that lion's eat him that day? He wasn't drinking. He wasn't looking at porn on his internet. He was praying three times a day. They said, you can't do that here. And they put him down there thinking that those lions were going to eat him alive. See, we are in such a culture that we don't understand that in the last 10 years, 1 million Christians worldwide have lost their lives simply because they believe in faith in Jesus. They're hardworking, law-abiding citizens. But because they embrace the faith that you have, that's over 100,000 a year, Brother Doug, are slaughtered, 100,000 a year, are slaughtered worldwide simply because of their faith in Jesus Christ. They did that back in Nebuchadnezzar's day, and we see it coming out on the horizon now. You don't think you won't be attacked for being a Christian? You don't think so? Ask the IRS. You know what they proved last year? All these people that were filing for exemption, which we didn't, but all those people that were filing for personal exemption, everybody got their exemption except Christian people. Did you know now, Brother Doug, the IRS has admitted they target Christian organizations. You know who pays the IRS's salary? You're looking at him, Brother Daniel. And the same company I'm paying their salary is now saying because you're a Christian, there are some tax exemptions that the government gives that you're not going to get them simply because you're a Christian. Now, if I was a Muslim and I laid in front of that place five times a day on a rug, they'd give me anything I wanted. If I was an illegal from another country that didn't pay any taxes, they'd give me anything I wanted. But because I'm a born-again Christian and I believe the Bible and I love God and I go to church and I've been washed in the blood, all of a sudden I become under attack by my own government that I'm paying for. And before Jesus comes, it's going to get worse. Not all, but many public schools have banned Bibles from being brought on campus, but yet pornography circulates freely. Jesus is now becoming restricted from jobs, but you can talk filthy, have an illicit sex life, and be a pervert, and be highly accepted and applauded. So what's going to happen with all this mess anyway? Handwriting's on the wall, man, this party's about over. If you believe anything about the Bible, you know this thing's about over with. So how's it going to end anyway? Daniel said this, and I'm done. He said, now wait a minute, fellas. Ain't that the story? He said, there's a day coming. You've built your empires. You've built your images of gold and silver and brass and clay. He said, set up your four world empires. We've already had the all four, including Rome. We've already had them. He said, but let me tell you how this thing's going to end. There's going to be a rock come out of the side of a mountain. And it's not going to be cut by hand. Because it is the original, eternal rock of ages. And that rock's coming down off that mountain. And it's going to roll into that image. And when it hits it, all the gold, silver, brass, and clay will be reduced to nothing but rubble. And that rock will stand in its place and be declared as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Somebody said, when you preach like this, don't you get discouraged? Lord, no. These signs will come to pass. Look up, for your redemption draweth nigh. I've read the last chapter of this book. Jesus is going to straighten all this mess out one of these days. He's coming to sit on the throne of David, and he's going to rule and reign for 1,000 years. And I promise you, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama won't be anywhere around. And the government will be upon his shoulder, and he will rule in righteousness. And the world will bow at his feet and say, you are the King of Kings and the Lord of all lords. You are God. Glory to God, what a day. I'm glad I've read the last chapter of the book and we win. Ushers, if you'll come, let's take up the Lord's tithe and offering. And I hope that you will be faithful in this part of worship.